When faced with a national tragedy or a personal setback, how many of you here have ever said to yourself, "Where are you, God?" You say that you're a God of love. You say that you're always with us. You say that you're going to work all things for good, but it doesn't feel like it. Back in Genesis, God spoke to the people of Israel and said, "You are my special chosen people that I love. I will be your God and you will be my people." But now, 400 years later, these same people are enslaved in Egypt, a foreign land and a brutal regime. And they cried out to God and said, "God, you said we are your special people. You said that you would be our God. But it doesn't feel like it." So God heard their cry and he sent to the Egyptians the plagues. And Adrian just read for us this morning the first plague of Egypt, when the Nile, the lifeblood of the land, turned to blood. After that comes the frogs and the gnats and the flies. And then I think it's the cattle are diseased, and then an outbreak of boils comes. This is followed by locusts and hail, 3 days of darkness, and then, most awfully of all, the death of every firstborn son. But what should we today, in our modern context, make of the plagues? Most of us, if we're honest, I think I'm just going to put this down. Most of us, if we're honest, dismiss the plagues. A, they're either a bit weird, B, irrelevant, or C, and this is probably what I thought, a story that shows a judgmental side of God, which actually I feel a bit uncomfortable about. What I want to show today is that, contrary to that view, the plagues contain the whole story of the Bible. They speak to us about our purpose, they speak to us about our rescue, and they speak to us about our hope. The plagues contain the whole story of the Bible. They speak to us about our purpose, they speak to us about our rescue, and they speak to us about our hope. So, our purpose. Theologians seem to agree that chapters 7 to 11 of Exodus are a direct undoing of Genesis 1 and 2. So if you remember Genesis 1 and 2, in the story of creation, God takes land, sea, man, woman, plant, animal, day and night. And he creates this amazing, beautiful, flourishing, perfect, balanced, coherent world. Exodus 7 to 11 is the story of the uncreation. It starts with a powerful, sophisticated empire. And day by day, bit by bit, it's undone, it unravels. First the sea, the river, then the animals, then the plants. Then there's darkness, and then finally, death. But what's going on? Why the similarities between Genesis 1 and 2 and Exodus 7 to 11? What's all this about, the creation and then the uncreation? Well, In Genesis 1 and 2, everything was beautiful, everything flourished, everything was perfect and balanced and whole, because everything behaved according to its purpose. God created this universe based on two principles: that we should love the Lord our God with all our heart and mind and soul and strength, and that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. That was our purpose. That was what kind of made the universe and the world so perfect and whole. And when we stopped behaving as we were meant to, as we were designed to, creation started to unravel. And I think it's easy to think, and I think I probably used to think, that you've got the world here, and then over here you've got judgment, and when the world doesn't do what it's told, well then judgment comes in and messes up the world. And I think what the story of the creation and the uncreation tells us something different. It's actually the creation and is intrinsic to that creation, is that we behave like we're purposed to. And so the unraveling is just a natural consequence of us not doing and not what we were purposed to do. If you cut a thread of a jumper, it starts to unravel. The consequences of a disobedience are natural because the will of God is natural. The plagues and the hardness of Pharaoh's heart are a natural disintegration of a natural order, because the natural purpose, the reason that we were made, has been broken. I'm just looking around who we've got here this morning, and I can spot a couple of medical doctors. And Emily and Gregor, I don't know if you ever had a patient who would come into your consulting room and say, "Dr. Ross, I've got high blood pressure, my cholesterol is high, what do you suggest?" And the doctor would then look at them and say, "Well, I suggest..." I hope I'm not taking words out of your mouth, Emily. I might be getting it wrong. Correct me later. The doctor would say, Emily would say, Gregor would say, "Well, you need to stop eating takeouts. You need to probably change your lifestyle and do a bit more exercise." And it would be quite unusual for the patient to say, "That is outrageous. How can you say such a thing? How can you impose on me such a terrible punishment? I'm just only merely exercising my right to choose my diet and my lifestyle." And actually, probably a patient would never speak like that, because we do know that it's a natural outworking, because a body is not being treated like it was purposed to. It's not according to its design. And so in the same way, the plagues are a natural undoing, because people were living outside of their purpose. So remember who you are, and remember what you were made for. So the plagues point us back and tell us about our purpose. But they also tell us about our rescue. So in a very simple way, the plagues were not sent to punish the Egyptians. I think if God really wanted to do that, he could have done it much more straightforwardly in one sort of single swoop. The plagues were not sent to punish the Egyptians, but rather they were sent to save and to rescue the Israelites. And also, the plagues point us forward to a time many generations after. In Exodus 11, there is darkness for 3 days, and then the firstborn is killed. In Matthew 27, darkness falls on the earth, and the firstborn son is killed and laid in the ground for 3 days so that many could have life. Jesus is life, and his miracles were acts of unplague. He willingly took the plagues on himself. He endured the separation of God and the darkness that came with that. He took upon him the brunt of our chaos so that we could flourish. And it's so easy, isn't it, to forget that we have been rescued, to forget that once we were lost, but now we have been found, that we were blind, but now we see. And so the plagues are about our purpose, who we were designed to be, and they're about our rescue. But it's all very well talking about those things, but what about today? What about the difficult things that we read in the headlines? What about our personal disappointments and failures? Well, the story of the plagues also speaks to our present and gives us hope. Over and over and over again, when the Israelites were in slavery and during the plagues, God says, "I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God." And even when things seem to be getting worse rather than better, God still kept on saying, "I am the Lord your God. Stay strong, be steady. I am the Lord your God." We're in a time of Lent at the moment. We're aware of our limitations. And sometimes things seem to be getting worse than better, rather than better. We see the unraveling of creation in the news. We have personal failures and setbacks. We're overlooked. But all in the midst of that, God still says to us, "I am the Lord your God. Be still, stay strong, don't lose faith. I am the Lord your God." So the plagues, they tell us about our purpose, they tell us about our rescue, and they give us hope. And that's not just the story for then, it's our story now. And my question to you is, do you know your story? Do you know that story? Is it your own? At work this week, I was in a meeting, and we had quite an important stakeholder present in the meeting. And he asked my boss, what's your strategy? What's your team doing at the moment?" And in reply, her lips moved and she made words, but at the end of it, none of us were any clearer as to what she'd said. And that evening I was reflecting on the day with Ian, and we were both just remembering how important it is that we know our story and we're able to give it when asked. 1 Peter 3:15 says, "Always be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks you about the hope that you have." And so my challenge to you as we finish off is, can you tell your story? So when you're thinking, "Where are you, God?" You say that you love me. You say that you're with me. You say that you're a God of love. But it doesn't feel like it. Or when people say to you, "What's going on in the world? I thought God was supposed to be in charge." Well, it doesn't feel like it. rather than saying, oh yeah, I suppose you're right really. It doesn't feel like it, does it? We've got a story to tell. It's a story of purpose. It's a story of rescue. And it's a story of hope. And it's the reason why we sing together. It's the reason why we tell the story of the cross before each communion. It's the reason why we say the creed. But when we leave here, when we're at college, when we're at work, or with customers or family or friends, are we able to tell our story? We've got a great story. We've got a story about a purpose, about who we were made to be. We've got a story about a rescue, about how Jesus came and took the plagues on himself so that we could go free. And we've got a story about hope, because God has said to us, and he keeps on saying to us, I am the Lord your God.